It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour, and my name is Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And he is back from his prodigal wanderings once again, and kind of on a streak of being here in the studio on Saturdays now.
Yeah, I think I've got a streak will continue for at least a few more weeks.
Well, good. It works out okay the other way, but it's more fun this way.
Yeah, I think I'm on the road the first weekend in December, but outside of that, I'm going to be around for a while.
Good. Well, again, as always on Saturday morning at this time, there's so much to talk about that we could probably carry on for hours. But we'll just muddle along talking about what we want to talk about, unless, of course, one of you decides to change our direction. You do that the easy way. Just pick up the phone and call the show, 904-222-8255. You will go to the front of the line, and we'll talk about what you want to talk about. We will have a trivia question, of course, and some insights into what might happen yet. We're at the 13th day of November now, and there's a lot of things that will go on between now and December that will affect you. Good morning, caller.
Hey, good morning. It's Bob from Welborn, Florida.
Well, hello, Bob. What's
I'm
up?
I'm sitting here on my front porch watching my chickens weed my garden. So
very nice.
It doesn't get any better than that. They're doing the work for me.
Hey. Nice.
Did you hear about the guy that there were two guys sitting around and a sod truck went by? And one of them said, I'm going to do that when I get rich. What's that? I'm going to send my lawn out to get mowed. But I digress.
Oh my goodness, that's a good one. I like that. Hey, wondered if you guys have any opinion on the one of the big stories towards the end of the week was at 4:59 was the Johnson & Johnson breakup, splitting into two, pharmaceutical and consumer. Mm-hmm. Wondered if you guys had an opinion on that, or if you had a chance to take a look at it. Or
it's really a theme this week. I think there were three companies that announced they were splitting, three major companies.
Right. Yeah, this one's a tough one, though, because it's going to be so confusing when you get two companies each named Johnson.
Right, exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
They do have an art gallery at the beach, and you know that.
Yes, we do know that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, the my opinion, the whole is often less than the sum of its parts.
It really it depends.
It does depend, but it's frequently true.
There was a little known stock that we happen to Steve happens to own a good amount of that. Had a business unit that was, they said, not being valued correctly by its shareholders, and they spun that off. This was probably about 10 years ago, maybe 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And so they spun it off, and it became publicly traded, and I believe it's up over 500%. So sometimes
they did not charge us for it either.
No,
if you own shares in the parent company, they gave you the shares of the little one. And it worked out rather nicely.
But that is just an anecdotal thing. I think you could go back through history and probably see about a 50-50 result of when this has worked and when this has not worked.
The big one was the Rockefellers. They literally made their huge fortune after the breakup of Standard Oil.
Mm-hmm.
The pieces were far more valuable than the whole.
Yeah, and that hasn't worked that well with AT&T, so.
Well, AT&T's almost back to where it started.
Yeah.
I think it's a loss to explain it.
I think it's part of a strategy, because if you look at the total sales and total net revenue and income and all the litigation that's going on, it's an attempt to lower that top bottom line number that they see in terms of going after money. So I don't know.
Well, there's another aspect, too, and we've talked about this not in this context before, but many times. Would you rather try to grow a behemoth business, or would you rather try to grow a smaller business?
Well, that's true.
Small business can grow quicker.
Yeah, it's like turning the Titanic or a small yacht. You know?
Exactly. So,
but on the flip side of that, when you split companies, then you now have to duplicate efforts in back office, so right. accounting, finance, HR.
Management, yep. management.
Exactly.
Yep, exactly, exactly. And it may create some sales jobs, who knows. But anyhow, I didn't mean to tie you guys up at the start of the show.
Oh, not a problem.
I thought I'd get in while I was enjoying my coffee and watching my birds. So.
No, we really appreciate it. It's a great question, and I will be following all of those three companies. The other ones, one was GE.
And then, oh yeah, GE.
That can't hurt a thing, in my mind.
No, the way they're going, No.
Recovering from MLT is a big job.
my daughter out of college worked for GE. She was a finance major at Florida, at the top of her class, and they sent her all over the world.
She did the management training program.
Yes, she started in Greenville, South Carolina. They moved her to Houston, Texas. They moved her to Atlanta. They moved her to Chicago, and now she's in the private equity business.
Nice. Oh, nice.
Doing real well.
That's so good.
My
roommate in my first year out of college was in that same program mm-hmm. in 1998, I believe.
It was a while back.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's making, five times what I made in sales.
Wow.
I mean, it's just unbelievable. So
great. Good for her.
Yeah, but anyhow, you guys, I'll let you go. I can't even take a shot of the trivia question today.
No,
I can give it out early.
I always win, so that's a good thing. I was just trying to avoid taking a guess.
Perfect.
Have a great day.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, that's a great question.
Yeah.
The results aren't exactly predictable based on what's happened in the past going so many different ways.
I'm actually looking up the other company that announced this week because I know there was another major and I can't remember what.
Yeah,
it was.
And I read something about it too, but it was early. Anyway, as I said, we're going to get into what happened in the market. It isn't very exciting exactly this week, like unlike some other times.
Got it. It's Toshiba.
Oh yeah, which makes sense too. They're so horizontally integrated that they're really unintegrated. They're just little standalone things anyway. You might as well treat them that way. So I'm all for it. Like I say, great question. And especially when you look at the different parts of J&J that are splitting apart, biotech is kind of a whole different thing from all the other stuff they produce day to day, the sort of retail end of it. And the biotech is a lot more volatile, that sort of thing. I think it's a very good idea. And I wish them well. I don't own any of it. Full disclosure.
Nor do I.
Okay. All right. We've got a little bit left. Why don't you just start out a quick rundown on why we had our thumbs down a little bit this week?
They were only about a quarter of the way down because it really wasn't that bad.
Because of Friday.
I was going to say it would have been bad had we not had Friday, but we saw a nice rally on Friday going into the weekend. The S&P ended up down just 0.3%. The Dow was off 0.6 and the Nasdaq 0.7. All of the volatility can be traced back to one cause, and that was the inflation report that came out midweek. And so I'll talk about that after the break, but there was a lot of inflation.
There was a lot of inflation, and there's a lot of anticipated inflation. And there's some interesting analysis you could do, but I don't know which way it's going to head, shall we say. I really wish we were dealing with more logical people in D.C. right now, but I've got the three big lies here that I'll bring up as we get into it after the break. So we'll pay some bills, come back and give out the trivia question, and then we're going to get into inflation and attitude and all that kind of stuff. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Banwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banwee.
And I'm Adam Banwee.
And we do have a trivia question, as usual, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Kenny at 904-636-7888. Everybody knows, if you're involved in investments at all, that it's been a really good year so far.
It certainly has.
And that's exhibited in many ways. But generalizing how good it's been, what percentage has the average American mutual fund increased year to date? A whole number between
now,
zero and I gave you the increase, so it's not a negative number.
So are we taking all mutual
average
funds?
Add them all up, divide by the number.
So
it doesn't matter if it's stock, bond, right. Hybrid, whatever.
You've got to consider that your bond funds are generally down for the year. So,
but the average is not down. But so what is the in whole numbers, what is the average average mutual fund, what does it return so far year to date?
Okay.
That's kind of an interesting question. It's actually fundamentally useless because you can't compare it to anything. But I don't mind a little useless trivia once in a while.
All right, fair enough. So we were just talking about inflation, which has been on everybody's mind lately. If you've paid for anything from gas to groceries, it's just a little bit overwhelming how much more things cost than they did even a year ago. And so not surprisingly, the market was focused on inflation this week as well. The report that came out midweek was not great. It was a CPI report, and the October report showed that prices were up 6.2% from last October to this October. That is the most that we have seen in any year point-to-point period in almost 30 years. So
1990.
Not a great number. Now, compared to the rampant inflation of the 1970s through 1982, the current environment, not so bad. It would take a sustained period of this type of inflation to equal what we saw back then.
Well, that's not going to happen because they told us it was transitory.
Yeah.
Well, actually, they told us that early in the week. By now, they're backing off.
But it's still a big shock because most, I would say the majority of investors alive today, maybe the majority, or at least close to the majority, have never been in a period like this.
Mm-mm.
So we've been near zero interest rates with very little inflation for 30 years, and that's what people are used to. So seeing prices skyrocket like this is very, very shocking. I don't know which way it's going to go from here. I think that if we had a different administration in place, there are tools at their disposal to curb this type of inflation, right. But this administration is pretty committed to not using those.
I said I would reveal the big lie. This, from what we're talking about right now, this is called a headwind. The administration, both Biden and Psaki, right now have said three things this week that are 180 from the truth. They said the Build Back Better law, supposedly, proposal, is number one, free. We paid for it all. Well, the CBO didn't even do a full scoring. They said it's at least $1.4 trillion off. All right, they said also, number two, that it is a tax cut.
The math on that, so we've talked about this.
Yeah.
And the math on that is
wrong.
Well,
it's
so hard to describe. I don't think that we can even do it on the radio. But
no,
I'll get into
that in a few minutes. Okay. After you're done. I got a little explanation of all that too.
All right.
Anyway, the third one is that sit down. This law is anti-inflationary.
No, that's a lie.
Well, one thing I can tell you for absolute certain is that no good policy will come out of this administration if they believe that is economics.
Yeah, that just doesn't even make sense.
No.
One of the main reasons to not pass this law right now is that it would be inflationary, and that's the last thing that we need today.
And nobody knows that better than Joe Manchin, and thank God he's the one that can stop it.
It is true. I just don't understand how they can't see that, but it would clearly be inflationary. I don't think there's a valid argument against that I can think of. If anyone has one, feel free to call and try it out. But
yeah, in fact, Friday, one of my headlines of the week, Kamala Harris guarantees Biden's Build Back Better spendapalooza is, quote, specifically designed to bring down inflation.
That's great.
You got to laugh or you're going to cry. I know.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of inflation, the NFIB Small Business Sentiment Report confirmed what the CPI report was telling us, which is that inflation is a huge problem for businesses, along with the cost and quality of labor. The good news is that poor sales was at the very bottom of the list of issues, so businesses are facing rising sales, but also rising costs in the current environment. This is a much better situation than the potential stagflation environment where sales would be stagnant and costs are rising. So a lot of businesses can deal with rising costs as long as their sales are going up.
Yep.
But the day those sales stop going up, that's when you get in some serious trouble.
He's not Jimmy Carter yet.
No, we're not anywhere near that today. But if this happened for the next 3 years of his presidency, definitely be there. Yeah.
And we're going to have to dig up a Ronald Reagan somewhere.
Another interesting inflation data point came out of the Michigan Consumer Confidence Survey. The one-year inflation expectation has surged to a level not seen since the energy price surge around the financial crisis. The five-year expectation hasn't surged like that, so consumers are thinking this is a temporary situation today, but that could change if we get into a prolonged period of inflation. The commodity space has been pretty volatile this year, and nowhere is that more apparent than in natural gas. Natural gas is down more than 13% in the month of November, down more than 20% in the fourth quarter, but has a gain of almost 75% this year. What a crazy year for natural gas.
No kidding. I've sat on it waiting for it for 5 years and finally gave up.
Natural gas prices actually make the prices of oil look pretty stable.
Yeah.
Oil's down 2% in November, but up 6.5% in the fourth quarter and almost 70% this year. Hmm. Well, oil and natural gas take up all the headlines. Gold and silver are putting together a nice turn in the fourth quarter. Gold is up over 6% and silver is up almost 14% after a inexplicable decline in the third quarter.
They're still underwater year to date.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Gold is, I think, minus 5 and silver's minus 10 year to date. So you can look at them. They're higher than they used to be, but they're not high.
No, definitely not.
If you're thinking about getting in, don't be afraid of the recent price increase.
So for November, all three major indexes are positive, but the gains have come in small and mid-cap stocks as well. They're up 4% and 6% respectively. Within the S&P, the biggest winner has been materials, which is likely driven by the passage of the infrastructure bill. Materials is up almost 6% this month. Technology is in second place, up more than 3.5%. There are three sectors that have lost ground in November, but not by much. Financials are down 32 basis points, utilities 27, and energy just 2 basis points. While energy is down slightly in November, it's still the best performing sector this year, up more than 56%. International markets were a little bit more mixed during the month, but the big winner in the market has been the big loser recently, which is Brazil. Brazil is down more than 15% this year, but a November rally has it up more than 5% this month.
You almost got to take that one out of consideration because it's so much crazier than any other place.
It has been not quite as volatile as oil and natural gas, but not far behind.
Well, there's a lot of that in their economy, too.
Even China has managed a small gain in November, but it's still down almost 3% this year. One of the few markets besides Brazil that's down for the year is China, and that has a lot to do with the political nonsense that's happening over there, I believe.
And he deserves every bit of it.
Yeah, it's not surprising considering all the craziness coming out of there recently. So that does it for my market wrap. Did you have anything you wanted to add?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention on the messaging we're getting on this stuff. There's a word that has been floating around the news for a couple of years that I detest. That word is conflate. It unfortunately means exactly what it means, and that's what they're doing. For instance, on this one, what we're looking at is potential stagflation. The risks are very high. But what you hear from the administration is that inflation is going to plummet. But they don't say that. They say prices are going to plummet, and that is not true. The rate of change of prices is called the CPI or the rate of inflation. When they say prices will plummet, no, that means they're going to go up a little slower. But they're not. There will be some things that come down. You know, there's always things like that. But this is just one of the ways they hide it. There's some other ones. They conflate, if I might, healthcare versus health insurance. And they flop back and forth like there's no difference.
Wealth and income.
Yep. Deficit versus national debt.
Mm-hmm.
There is only a slight relationship in that one adds to the other, but they are not the same thing. Equity versus equality. Those are about as different as they could possibly be. One refers to opportunity, one refers to outcome. And then there's the common prosperity. That's what the Chinese now have adopted for redistribution of wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you've been talking a couple of times about that, where Xi has kind of come down on the people who were getting really rich in China, and he was backing them like crazy until one day he decided that can't have any more of that now.
No.
So all that prosperity created by people like Jack Ma is just going to go to waste now because they turned back into registered socialists, and I don't see them coming off of that.
So, well, I don't think Elon Musk feels very different right now.
I think you're absolutely right about that. Anyway, we've got a lot more. I want to talk about inflation one more time, and then I also want to talk about some year-end things like buying a dividend. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after we pay some bills. This is the Vanwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanwee.
And I'm Adam Vanwee.
And the trivia question is still open out there, as are the lines. You can call us at 904-222-8255. Trivia question, what percentage has the average American mutual fund increased this year to date? Just a whole number based on a percentage. Okay. Who's in charge of this inflation thing anyway? Well, there aren't many choices, that's for sure. Of course, the government is the biggest problem in here. And I don't think anybody needs to hear an explanation of why this is on everyone's mind, including ours. But it was bad a week ago. It got badder this week. Well, the wildest dream estimate for the people, the, you know, those experts that we so often quote and I so often ridicule, the highest possible for last month was going to be 0.7, until, of course, it was released on, what, Wednesday morning? And it was 0.9, taking the overall rate up to 6.2 for a year and having a lot of people comment that, you know, maybe this isn't so transitory. In fact, it might still be growing. You can see it in some things that happen in the market. Tips had a close over 131. That's never happened before.
Mm-hmm.
And gold and silver up. A lot of the inflation hedges are up like that. Well, it's bad enough for people trying to make a living right now between gasoline and food. But help is on the way. They're from the government, and they're here to help.
Well, I'm encouraged already.
You should be. As those of us in the more mature age group, who are collecting Social Security, we got a big old raise, 5.9%. And frankly, that's not what I'm complaining about, because that was introduced prior to last month. So the overall rate was actually in line with what they were reporting before, which we all know is a lie, but I digress.
That was a shockingly big number for them to admit to.
Absolutely it was. So how about their handling it on some other things. I mentioned when we first started talking about that Social Security increase that it's possible that Medicare might eat up some of it. Some of it was a bit of an understatement, mm-hmm. I think. So here we go. The Medicare payments, and I know some people think they get Medicare free, but they're wrong. They get it taken out of their Social Security, so go to socialsecurity.gov, open up an online account, and get in there, and you'll see what you're being charged. Base rate for normal people this year, $148.50 a month. Next year, that goes to $158.50. That's a 6.7% increase. Ditto for the other brackets, $207.90 to $221, $297 to $317, et cetera, et cetera. Those numbers are all up over 6%. So we get a 5.9% raise there, but our Medicare goes up. And the brackets, this is called IRMA. You've heard us talk about IRMA, the income-related monthly adjustment amounts. The more money you make, the more you pay for Medicare. You also, when you get up into about the third bracket, pay for Part D, which is the drug program, even if you don't use it.
Mm-hmm.
That is an absolute income tax hike. And the people at Social Security told me so. The lady I was talking to, I thanked her profusely for telling me the truth. So I didn't even look those up. But those apply very similarly to tax brackets. So when you make up to so much, you pay this, but over that, you pay this. And if you make over that, you pay that. So those brackets are indexed to inflation, right? And inflation, we just found out, was 6.2%, right? Or 6.7 if you believe this number. But that's not really true either. They did raise the brackets. I'll give them credit for that. But they raised them about 3%. So let's call it 3.1 and 6.2. So here's the deal they made with us without asking. We weren't in the room when they voted. We'll do a 6.2% cost of living, but we'll raise your Medicare 6.7, but we'll only raise your bracket 3.1. So we're going to cover half of it, and they're going to cover half of it. And somehow the fairness of that just seems a little hard to understand, I guess. So that's that one. Now, how about income tax brackets? They've been released now, too. And did they go up 5.9 or 6.2 or any of that?
I'm going to guess no.
Oh, you're right, 3.1.
So everything that benefits the individual taxpayer went up about 3%, and everything that costs us went up about over 6, it sounds like, except Social Security, which is up almost 6.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Reagan was the first one who indexed the tax brackets to avoid what we call bracket creep, meaning you don't have to make any more money, but you'll pay more, or at least not in inflationary terms. All right, how about we're not done yet, because we have now adopted a new system of estimating Social Security increases, cost of living, called change CPI. This is the one that you hear me ragging about all the time. Or it says, if you're an older person living on Social Security and you go out to the grocery store and you want to buy a steak and it's too expensive, so you buy a hamburger instead, well, then they're only going to give you credit for inflation up to hamburger because you made the choice not to live like you used to. And I get absolutely livid whenever I think about this. They are telling us that we're going to live increasingly less well every year, and that they're making it happen.
And it's the only example I know of in all of government where they actually try to gauge behavioral economics.
Yes, exactly.
And it works to our detriment. Yeah.
So true. Well, now they're trying to mess around again with the consumer price index as far as Social Security goes. And I don't know if they're going to actually implement it, but they're working on it. A new CPI called CPIE for elderly that's supposed to be a different market basket of goods, more in keeping with what older people buy than what the average working Joe buys. But they say it's probably going to go up faster than the CPI.
Well, that was my thought. It should.
It should, because it's all things
drugs
like
and
medical and that sort of thing.
I could definitely see that.
Now, do you want to bet?
Yeah, no.
You get my gist here?
Yeah.
I think it would be very difficult to find that we're actually getting more money. Now, there's some other things going on out there, too. There's some people advocating a one-time 2% across-the-board raise for Social Security. And there are some other ones that are advocating a certain minimum because they feel like the really low ones aren't high enough to live on. And that's all true. But Medicare and Social Security are going broke. And they're going broke rather abruptly. Now, these things would cost money. And who's going to, quote, pay for it, in the words of the federal government? Well, here it comes. Who'd they ask why? Was it Babyface Nelson or somebody? Why do you rob banks? Oh, maybe it was Bonnie and Clyde. Why do you rob banks? Well, that's where the money is. So they're going out to the so-called rich again, and they're going to throw in that deduction for payroll if you make above $400,000. And it's unlimited. So some celebrity or whatever makes, say, $50,000 in a year, or $50 million in a year, they're going to pay Social Security tax on all of it except the little tiny donut hole. And by the way, that donut hole shrunk again, too, because the old limit was 142 or something like that. Now it's going to be applied up to about 148.
Mm-hmm.
So yet another little contribution that we make. Oh, and by the way, that was more than 3.1%. It is unbelievable how crafty and dishonest these people are, and they know that most people don't pay attention to that sort of thing, and they just suck it to us. And there's no other way to put it. So just rest assured that you won't be any better off next year, thanks to the government.
On that top end, would it be the full amount, or just 6.2, that above 450?
It's the Social Security part gets added back. Medicare part at 2.9% is unlimited already. The Social Security part.
No. So would you owe the full employee and employer 12.4?
Well, if you're 6.2? Self-employed.
Well, I would think most people in that bracket would be.
That's very, very likely. So yeah, you want to really, really get into some serious money. Yeah, I think there are going to be backlashes from people like Elon Musk, and I think there'll be some other celebrities and so on that come out too. But this is all part and parcel of what they're trying to pass, which we don't really believe has a very good chance of passing, and we'll discuss that a little bit too. But be afraid, people. Be very afraid. It's your money. All right, we'll pay some bills, be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Banwe Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banwe Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banwe.
And I'm Adam Banwe.
And trivia question is still open, and so are the lines. 904-222-8255. What percentage has the average American mutual fund increased year-to-date this year? And the only bracket we have is from zero up. That's sort of the one-handed clapping sound I'm hearing. Got another one on the other end.
Need a high end on the bracket.
Yeah, we do. All right. What does a financial advisor cost to the average person?
That's an interesting question.
Minus 1.5% to 4% is the answer.
According to who?
According to who did this?
Is that the Vanguard study?
It might be. Advisory HQ or HO. Not sure exactly, but anyway, this study gets repeated frequently by different people, and most people who don't use an advisor say, I can't afford it. Mm-hmm. Well, using an advisor returns, in general, between 1.5% and 4% extra over our cost.
Over fees?
Yeah. Just so you know. Don't be afraid. We don't bite. And consultation's free.
Yep, it always is. You can schedule one of those if you're interested, mm-hmm. right on our website, vanwefinancial.com, or just call the office during business hours, 904-685-1505, mm-hmm. and come in, see us, and get a free hour. Even if you don't become a client, I promise you'll leave knowing a little bit more than when you came in, and it will be worth your time.
When you're kind of cruising around the internet like we do for getting ready for the show and so on, and just generally studying up on what the world is doing, there are a couple names we avoid because we find them a little outlandish or whatever. You've heard me talk about a few of them, I'm sure. But in the political sense, there's a name like that also. And he is a senator from Oregon. His name is Wyden, Ron Wyden. And when Wyden talks, nothing good is likely to come of it. So what now? Well, if you've been investing a while, listening to the show for a while, any of that, you know that I've been in this business 21 years now. And in that time, we went from having a few exchange-traded funds and a pile of mutual funds to pretty much the reverse of that. ETFs have really had a good couple of decades.
And if you look at the new releases, it's hard to find a newly released mutual fund.
It is indeed.
But ETFs, there's, several all every day place. Almost. It's amazing how many new ones are launched.
Yeah, and some of them I don't like, some of them I do. Mm-hmm. There's some that, Adam does a lot of research on this, there's some that I find is so clever I can only wish I'd thought of it.
Yeah, no doubt.
But Wyden's back. Now, I mentioned ETFs and mutual funds, and this time of year for a reason. There is a phenomenon in mutual funds called buying a dividend. And what that means is that every mutual fund by law is required to distribute at least once a year all the capital gains and income that they have realized over the year. Well, when they do that, if you're reinvesting dividends, they will pay it out and immediately reinvest in more shares. And those shares will be reduced in cost by the amount of the dividend. That is a taxable event if you're holding it in a taxable account. And you want to avoid that at all costs because you have nothing to show for it. It's fine if it happens every year. You've owned it for years. That's the way it is. Now, I'd argue that there's an ETF for almost every mutual fund, not all of them, that you could do better. You could get similar results with less taxation. Excuse me. Well, Wyden comes along now. And first off, I'll tell you why. The ETF industry set itself up on doing these kind of crazy transactions, actually, where they have bank will come in, throw in some cash, and they move some stuff out, and then they take the cash out. And on the name for it is Heartbeat Trades. And I'm not familiar with them.
No.
But what it does, it allows the ETF to defer your profits, capital gains, and income so that they don't have to pay out once a year.
Mm-hmm.
So you could just own this for years, and until you sell it or until you take a cash distribution at that time, you will not pay any taxes. So tax efficiency has probably been the number one thing that has made the ETF business strong as it is now.
I would say that and tradability.
The flexibility is excellent. You can trade it right now, literally at lightning speed. You can be in or out of it. That's another really good thing. Plus, you can do that any time of the trading day, whereas mm-hmm. a mutual fund only trades once a day, and that's after the market closes. Well, here comes Wyden, naturally. And he has suggested the repeal of the tax advantage for the $6.8 trillion U.S. exchange-traded fund industry.
Of course.
Yeah. Why? Because over a decade, in theory, it would take in a new revenue about $20
billion. $20 billion?
Not trillion.
No, it's right. It's just not that much money.
Oh, excuse me, $205 billion over a decade.
Oh, okay.
I'm thinking on the 10-year thing. So $205 billion. Now, this is in a proposal that's probably realistically between $4 and $6 trillion. And this is $200 billion. Is that really worth it to anybody?
No.
Who owns a lot of mutual funds?
I would guess.
Everybody.
Yeah, a lot of, I mean, everybody in their retirement accounts or
but
wealthy people.
Lucky for you. He exempted retirement accounts because they're not taxed anyway.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
So all he's doing, he's picking on people who own mutual funds and ETFs in their non-retirement, non-tax deferred accounts, saying, you got to just pay more because you're obviously wealthy. If you've got mutual funds, you're wealthy, right?
Yeah, something like that.
We were talking at the break in last week's blog. If you look at our website, it talks about D.C. speak. A wealthy person to someone in D.C. is someone who either makes more money than they do or has more net worth than they do or both. They'd really like the both, and that's their target. So this... I'm not going to call him names. This senator has decided that he is single-handedly going to interfere with one of the great success stories that are making people able to retire by increasing their own wealth.
Yeah, it's true. The rise of the ETF has led to so many great changes in the financial world and
really
in the investing space. And it's led to the ease of younger people getting invested earlier and more often. And
getting better returns overall.
Absolutely. And increasing the net worth of young people is extremely important towards the future health of the USA. I do not understand why he wants to target that.
Because I said this on the blog, I think. It requires the mindset that all money
is
government money.
Yeah, mine.
And whatever you get to keep is a tax expenditure to them and a blessing for you.
Absolutely.
Even though you earned it. What the highest marginal rate?
So I looked it up. So we were talking about the Social Security potential increase. And under the proposed new law, which has not been passed yet, the highest marginal rate in California would go to 54%. Now, if you tacked on Social Security on income above $450,000 in California. So half of that, 6.2% of it is what you would pay as an employee. 6.2% is what you would pay as an employer. And half of that is deductible to you. So the rate comes out somewhere in the 9 to 10% range. In additional taxes on top of the 54%. So right. Essentially, the top marginal rate in California would go up to around 63%.
Now, I don't know a great number of people who make a great amount of money, but I'll tell you what I would do if I got hit with that. Yeah. It wouldn't be make more money.
No.
It wouldn't be work harder.
Well, not in California.
And it wouldn't be staying in California.
No. Can you imagine if someone told you you can go out and earn some money, but for every dollar that you make, you get to keep 37 cents?
And with that, you can pay your property taxes.
Yeah.
And your sales tax.
That's true.
All right. The average mutual fund this year is up 21%. That's including all kinds of different funds. And it's just a remarkable number to me, way higher than I ever would have thought in a time frame when stocks are doing well and bonds are not particularly. But it shows you the strength of the market has returned. That's why they want to take so much of it away from us. I want it left exactly the way it is. It ain't broke. Don't fix it, right? All right, lots more next week at the same time. Quick note to all you Robinhood users. There's been a hack, and millions of people have been compromised is the word I'm looking for. Look it up. See you next week. This is the Banway Financial Hour.